Welcome to the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. I am Sarah Polinchek, and my co-host is John Summers Flanagan. How are you doing today, John?
Well, thank you for asking, yes. Sarah. I am feeling so self-regulated.
Okay. Well, the title of today's show is The Secret Self-Regulation Cure.
Ooh.
You're already there.
I'm here. I've got the cure. This is part one of a series that we're having on the world of feelings. And, you know, feelings are pretty important feelings, and we're going to use also the word emotions. We're going to use them interchangeably, although some people think feelings are more like sensations, and they do go with emotions. Oh, I think I'm talking more than you really wanted me to talk about this particular thing, but instead, I'm going to stop and say, Sarah, why is the ability to self-regulate so important?
Way to regulate yourself, John. All right, I have many reasons. We're just going to talk about a few today. But one is that so much of the parenting advice that's out there focuses on these topics about how to help our kids succeed, how to get them to behave better, how to get them to stop talking back, you know, stop watching video games, do your homework, I mean, so on and on and on. But we just don't hear a lot of advice on emotions, and more specifically, advice on how kids learn to regulate their own emotions and soothe themselves. So important. Let's take a minute and think about this. Can you imagine that we lived in a world where our neighbors and our friends and the people we work with, the world leaders, for example, just as an example, excelled in this ability? Can you even imagine if everyone was able to regulate themselves?
You're reminding me of a song by the former Beatle, John Lennon. Imagine, let me think, what were the lyrics? Imagine.
Oh, dear.
No, I'm not going to sing. But, you know, imagining all the people living in peace and harmony. And really, it's about being in a self-regulated state.
Definitely, yeah. So another huge reason we want kids to learn how to manage their emotions is that managing yourself really undergirds our ability to form and maintain relationships.
Yeah, John, you think?
Yeah, I mean, serious. I mean, it's huge, huge, huge. So what do we know about forming and having healthy relationships?
Well, you know, I'd say to start with, we know that relationships can be very variable, right? By that, I mean that people have different kinds of relationships, and they can be good relationships. They don't have to be kind of a cookie-cutter type of relationship. That said, we know some general things that are pretty helpful, and that is to have feelings of love and affection, to engage in kind and loving touch, to communicate, to be interested in how the other person is doing, having compassion for one another, thinking about one another, and also thinking about the relationship as a partnership where you are going through life together and wanting to be successful together.
What about managing conflict?
Well, and being able to communicate and manage conflict and having some conflict management skills, really important. And then I would say when all those things go well, relationships actually increase our health, increase our longevity, and I think undoubtedly increase our quality of life.
Undoubtedly. We know that. We've had a whole show on that, too.
We have.
Yeah. Third is that we want kids to learn this skill because there have been so many studies that find that individuals who have the ability to manage themselves and soothe themselves, they're way less likely to go to alcohol or pot or meth or cocaine. I'm just trying to think of all the drugs.
Opioids.
Opioids as a form of comfort, right? They can comfort themselves. They don't need to become addicted to substances in order to soothe themselves. That's a big deal.
That's a huge deal. A couple of things just come to mind, so I'm going to free associate a little bit here.
Okay.
We have this thing that we know, the research tells us that there are these adverse childhood experiences. We call them ACEs. And the more adverse childhood experiences that you have, the more, in some ways, you have adverse adult experiences or conditions. And so the more of these kinds of things, trauma, abuse, exposure to addictions that we have as children, the more likely we are to have mental health problems, the more likely we are to have relationship problems, the more likely we are to have physical health problems. And so I have this idea that all those adverse childhood experiences are in some ways causing a little bit of chronic brain and body dysregulation. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so we're going through life with that. And I think one way then people are trying to deal with their chronic brain and body and emotional dysregulation is often through external means like drugs, alcohol, sometimes relationships, any relationship. You know, you get into any relationship as a way to kind of help yourself self-regulate or self-soothe, and then it turns out to be not a good relationship.
Yeah.
Compulsive behaviors, all those kinds of things, I think, are in some ways people trying to self-regulate.
Definitely, yeah. So there's so many reasons. I'm just going to name one more, which is that individuals who can manage their emotions and soothe themselves have less disease and infection. I mean, that's really, really compelling, strong evidence, right? If we could literally have less cancer, for example, mm-hmm. because we're able to stay in a more soothed state more often. So there's a lot of reasons that we want our parents to learn about self-regulation and how to teach it to kids.
Yes. And so, yeah, I would like less disease and infection.
Me too.
Right. That's a great goal. Now, I'm reminded, another little sidebar.
Okay. Lots of memories.
Really being a professor today.
Yes.
Yeah, I got a lot to say. Well, speaking of professors, there was a guy named Walter Mischel at Stanford University. And way back in the 60s and 70s, he did a series of delay of gratification studies. Mm-hmm. What he did was he had kids sit in a room, and the experimenter would come in and say, okay, you can have this marshmallow now, or you can have four marshmallows if you don't eat the marshmallow sitting in front of you until I come back. If it's still there, I'm going to give you four marshmallows.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was a lot of the kids, well, they struggled. Some of them ate the marshmallow. Sometimes there were pretzels. Sometimes there were M&Ms. Anyway, so they ate the food sometimes, and other kids were able to wait. And what he found was those kids that were able to wait had this ability to delay gratification that predicted their success academically and in other ways like 10 or 15 years later.
Wow.
I think delaying gratification, having the ability to soothe yourself and use a strategy to wait for something is another way of talking about self-regulation.
And that sounds like really compelling evidence. I mean, I know that study. I gave it to my kids.
Yeah.
I recommend doing that.
Yeah. I know the study because I actually was on a research team when we were replicating it in some ways here at the University of Montana. And what we found was so funny that some of the kids, they'd start to pound on the table and sing a song and do things to distract themselves.
Oh, so you could watch them in real time regulating themselves. Isn't that so cool?
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. You know, I think this might be a good time, John, to pause our discussion of emotional regulation just for a second and talk about this concept of outside in versus inside out.
Mm-hmm.
This is something we've mentioned several times on our show, and you and I talk about it a lot when we're talking to our students at the university and to people that we're teaching parenting stuff to. Tell us a little bit more about this idea.
I like to encapsulate the idea with a little rhyme, and that is, a pill is not a skill.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, we are better off if we develop internalized skills to address our challenges with emotional dysregulation or dysregulation, then we are using an external substance to help us to feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I think we're both talking about when we say outside in. Well, certainly sometimes people need medications, but in general, if you can, from the inside out, help yourself self-soothe and feel better, that's something you have with you all the time. So developing those skills and strategies, internalizing them, really important.
Very important. So we really want our kids to learn these inside-out concepts where they learn some ways to comfort themselves. And then, yeah, I'm just repeating what you just said, but we would like for them to be able to, you know, do things like take deep breaths or think about something that makes them happy rather than saying, oh, I'm going to go pop a pill to make myself feel better. Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a huge area, but let's start breaking it down into some ways that we can help parents start laying a foundation for their kids that will set them up to be successful in this sort of inside-out way of managing emotions and doing the self-soothing thing.
So I'm going to start by reminding our listeners of someone we've mentioned a few times on this podcast, John Gottman. You know,
you mention him a lot.
I do. I'm a fan.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of his work.
That's good.
Yeah. So Dr. Gottman is a researcher from the University of Washington. He's best known for his work with couples. Well, we've talked about him on a podcast that we did with couples.
Right.
But he's also done a lot of work teaching parents to become emotion coaches. I've always really liked that, an emotion coach. I just think that title is kind of cool. It really has a supportive, important ring to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's cool. And parents, it's kind of fun. I think parents can relate to the idea of, huh, I can coach my kid through this.
Yeah, we're not telling them. It's, it implies something different. We're coaching them and being supportive.
Right.
Dr. Gottman has 5 steps for how to respond to kids' emotions. And the way we respond when our kids express themselves is a critical piece to practically, not completely, because we can't ever completely master this, right? But practically mastering this whole world of emotions that we're talking about today.
Yeah, and you know, the first step in the process is to really help our kids be aware of their emotions, right? Recognizing, being aware of the emotions. A lot of times as parents, it's easy for us to dismiss, push away, or rush through an emotional state. And instead, I think what's important is for us to be self-regulated enough ourselves so that we can tune into and recognize our children's feelings.
I so agree. This is such an important step. Because, you know, when we're busy or we're just not in the mood to deal with big, unpleasant emotions, it's so easy to pretend we don't even know that our kids are upset or to just tell them, you know, stuff it, essentially. So step 2 is to view emotions, especially those big, unpleasant ones, as an opportunity for growth and connection. Now, John, I've heard you say before that we should look forward to our kids' next tantrum. Right?
That is one of my parenting tips.
An unpleasant emotion. So tell me more about that.
It's an awkward parenting tip. Everybody who I say it to thinks that I'm absolutely crazy.
Right.
But here is the deal. I mean, life is about learning. And we can learn from the tantrums. We can help our children learn from the tantrums. And the tantrums, although they're generally unpleasant, I mean, they are really kind of an unparalleled, amazing opportunity for learning. And so I encourage parents to think about it that way, because when your child is upset, and Gottman says the same thing, you can kind of get alongside and help coach them through it instead of oppose them and say, get over it, stop it.
It's not that big a deal just because you got strawberry jelly instead of grape jelly. Get over it. Who cares?
Yeah. Stop your whining right now.
Yeah. All right. So I totally agree with that. And now we're going to talk about step 3. And this one I think is really hard. We have to listen, and validate our kids' feelings.
That doesn't sound all that hard.
It is hard, John. It's hard because we're adults, and what adults do so well is we just want to fix the problem, right? We just want to get on with it. We don't want to have to take the time to validate feelings.
So what you're saying, Sarah, is that oftentimes you as an adult will feel a little impatient with the emotional identification and listening process.
Yes, and when you use that creepy voice, I feel especially validated. So thank you.
Okay, stop it with the creepy voice.
Oh, gosh. So the next one is really important. It's giving our kids an emotional vocabulary.
Step 4.
Yeah, step 4. This is really, you know, because I think it would be easy to grow up thinking that you're just mad or happy, and that's it. And really, there's a wide breadth of different feeling words that we can use. Yeah. And from a really young age, to help our kids get a really well-developed, deep emotional vocabulary can be really helpful. Just sometimes, if a kid has just a label, like, oh, you're really frustrated, or you might be feeling really overwhelmed. I mean, just being able to put a word to the feeling makes it less big and less scary for younger kids, right?
Right. Yeah. You can use mad, bad, glad, sad.
Happy.
You can use all those.
But yeah, and I just think this is an important thing to work on. As an example, oftentimes we as an adults might be feeling anxious about something, but we think we're hungry, right? So helping kids really get clear and identify what it is that they're feeling, because you can only imagine if you grow up thinking that, well, I'm anxious, but I think I'm hungry, and you eat every time you're anxious about something, you can see where that might take us.
Now, one of the things that happens, I think, with parents is that they'll try to guess their child's feeling. And that can be a miss. And, of course, we are going to be wrong sometimes. And if we take too much responsibility for it, and this is one of the bad things we can do as parents, is we can start to overlay our own feelings on top of our child. I mean, if I feel angry, it must be my child feels angry. If I feel sad, it must be my child feels sad. And so we can start to miss our kids' emotions because we're so preoccupied with our own. I think in some ways, although helping our children identify and label the emotions, absolutely crucial, in some ways, maybe it's better just to create that space to explore the emotion and really even ask occasionally. You can do this too much, but ask occasionally, well, what's going on inside? What are you feeling about this? We lost our family dog. What are you feeling? And I think one thing that parents often do is rush right through it and get a new dog, right?
And I'm just thinking of modeling there. Like, mm-hmm. we lost our family dog. I'm feeling really sad. So for us as parents to be able to express what our feelings are can be one of the most helpful things. And I think I probably, as I'm thinking about this in the moment, I can't even imagine asking my 15-year-old to say, what are you feeling and experiencing? He would run away from me so fast. But I think if I were to just keep expressing what I'm feeling, that he's going to keep learning that.
Yeah. So right? I guess I'll just say you're right. You're right, Sarah.
Good. I like to be right.
Kids, they want the last cookie. They don't get the last cookie, right? They want to finish playing their video game. They don't get to finish their video game. They want to be the first one in line. They don't get to be the first one in line. And all those life experiences evoke emotions. It's a natural thing.
Yeah.
And I hear you saying today, let's not rush through it too much.
Right. And all these things are so important, but we don't want our listeners to think that if we do these things, like we have awareness, we listen, we validate, we give them words, that that's going to fix and stop the unpleasant emotions, because it's not.
No.
Right? That's not the goal.
No.
The goal is for our kids just to be able to understand what these emotions are so that they can regulate themselves.
Right.
We're not trying to stop emotions. We want to be really clear about that. Feelings can't be fixed.
Right. And, well, you know, and this is the Practically Perfect Parenting podcast, recognizing that even if you do a lot of things that theoretically are right, it doesn't mean everything is going to go perfectly. But there are some opportunities for solutions, right?
Yeah.
Right, Sarah?
Yeah, definitely. But the key to this next step, so this is step number 5, where we are having some time for problem solving, is that we don't move towards this problem solving technique too quickly. I think that's a tendency that we all have, is we just want to jump in and make everything go away and fix it.
Right.
But if we stay in that coaching role and not try to solve the problem for them, but maybe elicit some, you know, just imagination from our kids about how they might solve the problem and be accepting of any of the ideas that we have and just have that process with them, that's really important.
Right. And I can think of times when I think maybe I didn't allow for the problem solving process and maybe I wanted to move on. And some examples I think of is, you know, my daughter afraid of the toilet, right? And, you know, get over it. I don't want that. I mean, let's just, come
on.
It's
not scary. Come on. It's not going to do anything to you. Yeah.
Let me show you. I'll flush it.
Yeah.
Okay. There. Now. Nothing came out.
Right. Problem solved.
Problem solved. I mean, I think I've rationally gone through all the steps and it's not solved.
Yeah.
Another example is to say, you know, your sibling is bugging you.
And I've just heard of that happening.
Get over it. If your sibling or your
my children
sons.
Who are siblings, sometimes they bother each other.
Yeah, yeah. I have seen that happen too in families. And to say, oh, just get over it. Just ignore your brother or just ignore your sister.
Yeah.
Great advice. It really is great and logical advice, but if we try to go there too soon, we have not validated the fact that it is tough. I remember a friend of mine telling me this story. He had two sons. His younger son was really a challenge, and something happened in the car, and someone, you know, was trying to get the younger son to do something, and the younger son just sort of kicked the parent in the chin.
Oh.
And the older boy looked at the parent and said, welcome to my world.
That's pretty good.
It is.
Things aren't always smooth and peaceful in families.
No.
You know, and it just makes me think about this and how hard it can be. I have two boys. And my younger one, we've always called him, we used to call him not to his face, but behind his back a little bit, the spicy son.
Ah.
And, you know, I was able to look at some of his behaviors as passion and a quality that would serve him well in life. So I was able to look at it that way, but it was hard.
Yeah.
There were a few years where he was really just learning how to manage himself and didn't have a grasp on it for sure because he was young and he was learning. And there were just hard moments. And when I was being a practically perfect parent, I would stay regulated with him and I would be kind of that secure person that he could just process and unload and do what he needed to do. But I couldn't be the practically perfect parent all the time. It was tough.
Right.
You know, and so sometimes I went there with him, you know, because it just gets overwhelming and we have to recognize that we're human and that we try. I think one of the phrases a counselor that we used to work with used to say is that parents control the emotional climate of the home. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I tell myself a lot and try to remember that in order to help my kids learn their own regulation, that I need to have myself regulated. And I think that's something that I've a mantra of mine I've used over the years, and I've found it helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess the thing that comes to mind to me about this is that self-regulation is one thing, but that doesn't mean we don't have emotions.
Yeah.
Of course, parents are triggered. We are triggered by our kids.
Mm-hmm.
Does that mean sometimes you'll raise your voice? Of course you will.
Yeah.
Does that mean sometimes you will feel sadness?
Mm-hmm.
Of course. And so self-regulation doesn't mean we don't have emotions, but it means that we experience them, and we try to experience them in the healthiest way we can, and we aren't perfect at that.
Definitely.
But we experience them, and we try to be good emotional role models as well.
Yeah, for sure. One of the things I've been told by many people is that I have a very expressive face.
Mm.
And so my spicy son would say, "You're yelling at me," and I wouldn't even be saying anything, but I think I had the expression of, you know.
You were yelling at him with your
face.
With
my face. So I have to be really careful to keep my face looking peaceful and pleasant. It's hard. You know, we're talking about so many things here that I think are so important that I foresee a future episode where we go deeper into some of the specific strategies we could use to help ourselves stay calm and help teach those strategies to our kids.
That's a great plan. But for now, let's stay focused and do the money tip.
Okay, sounds good.
Cha-ching, ching, ching.
So this is the time when what we have to offer our listeners is worth $100. What do you have, John?
I got $1,000.
Oh, $1,000.
I mean, I don't want to brag.
Okay.
Whenever anybody starts a sentence with, I don't want to brag, what they mean is,
exactly.
I do want to brag. But I have a self-regulation, it's just all one thing tip. It's only one psychological procedure. It all comes down to one important, crucial, fundamental process that we all can experience psychologically.
What is it?
You know, I'm afraid I can't tell you. It's a secret, and it is, a lot of the reality shows and some of the dramas on TV and even the detective shows, they'll make you wait until next week.
I'm imagining our audience becoming dysregulated by having to wait for this secret, John.
That's okay. They can, I know they can make it through their emotional dysregulation and their feelings of annoyance toward me.
You think? I hope so.
I hope so.
We'll teach them some strategies.
Yes.
Okay. Well,
There's only one strategy, and I'll teach it next week.
I have some real stuff that's actually worth money.
Okay, then.
Yeah, okay. So, one, this is going to be shocking. You're going to be shocked, mm-hmm. but it's the S word.
Oh, is it, let's see, is it sweet potatoes?
No, it is not. It's sleep.
I knew that.
I knew you knew it. But, you know, who can regulate themselves when they're exhausted? Nobody, and especially not a 5 or a 10 or a 15-year-old. Mm. Being tired is not the recipe for self-regulation, okay? So go back and listen to one of the sleep episodes. Get your kids rested.
Yeah, and when I give my secret thing next time,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be the solution to all sleep problems, too.
Oh, I'm so excited. Okay, so number two is when we're thinking about that emotional vocabulary we mm-hmm. were talking about, one of the fun things that I like to recommend parents do with kids is to, you know, when you're reading a book or something, is to look at the characters and imagine, what do you think that person's feeling? You know, I think that's a really good exercise to help kids learn and just make these good educated guesses about what might other people be experiencing based on how they look.
Yeah.
When kids get older, I think it's really good for them to practice wondering, like, why did that person behave the way they behaved?
Yeah.
To keep that curiosity. I had this experience recently where I was encouraging my son to do that. I was picking him up. He was at a middle school, and there was a kid at the front desk who was very dysregulated.
Mm-hmm.
He was very upset, and he was saying pretty disrespectful things. His behavior wasn't okay. And the principal was doing a really nice job, but he was a really tall guy. He was like 6'5".
Mm-hmm.
And I was just yearning for him to get down on this kid's level and connect with the kid.
Yeah.
I was just willing it to happen in my, you know,
did it
my,
work? Did
my
you
mind
will
trick.
It? Did
it didn't work,
it didn't
no.
Work.
Yeah. And we got out to the car and my son was like, oh my gosh, that kid, wow, he's got problems. And I just thought, okay, here's an opportunity. We don't want to just dismiss people's behavior and just say, well, that person's got problems or this person's just acting like a jerk. We really want to wonder, like, mm-hmm. what do you think was going on for him?
Yeah.
You know, because I saw a whole breadth of emotions from that kid. He was afraid.
Yeah.
He was scared. I think those were the biggest things. He was acting like he was angry, but mm-hmm. I think it came from a place of fear. And I think having that conversation with my son to really wonder about it was a good exercise for him.
Yeah, I think what you're saying, and it's a really good tip, is to try to instill an attitude of curiosity about emotions in your children so that they can be curious about other people's emotions and they can be curious about their own emotions. And that is a good step toward trying to understand them.
Yeah, for sure. So I think I get $100.
You probably get. I got nothing because I didn't give anything.
All right. All right. You have a resource, though.
Yeah, my resource.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. My resource is the same thing. It's my secret that I'm not going to tell anybody until the next episode. And I just want to say that it's worth $1,000. I am going to write it up on my blog and say it in the next episode of this show. And we usually try to have shows every couple of weeks, and we're not perfect on that.
But practically, right.
Practically.
Okay.
So look forward to that resource.
I think, I don't know, I think the listeners might be liking me better than you right now.
Oh, but they're excited about the future.
Okay.
Anticipation All right. is a lot of the gratification.
Okay, I'll let you go with that. My resource is Raising an Emotionally Intelligent Child by John Gottman and Joan DeClaire.
Wow.
I know, it's really good.
That's great.
Okay.
Well, it's time for us to say goodbye for this 2-week period.
Okay.
We hope it's only 2 weeks.
Right. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Sarah. And thank you to all the listeners out there. And we look forward to talking with you next time.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
The Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast is sponsored in part by the Charles Englehart Foundation, audio engineer Mike Matthews, production assistant Joey Moore, and co-hosts Sarah Polinchek and John Summers Flanagan.